She'll just go, okay. Okay. Hi, I'm Anne Elizabeth Montgomery. I'm as she said, and this is a new thing. I don't have anything to disclose. Okay, so the purpose of this study is really just to using qualitative data and quantitative data to describe life experiences in interpersonal and social context of female adolescents who have had rapid repeat pregnancies. And that purpose is quite ambitious, so I'm going to do my best in the 15 to 20 minutes that I have. So just a little bit about the problem of rapid repeat pregnancy. It is considered sort of a health problem because the ideal interpregnancy interval for adult women is 18 to 23 months. So 18 to 23 months between the resolution of a first pregnancy through birth and then a second pregnancy. Healthy People 2010 actually recommends that for adolescents that interval be longer, and it actually that adolescents shouldn't have a subsequent pregnancy or birth until they exit their teen years. But approximately 20% of adolescent mothers will give birth to a subsequent child within 12 to 24 months of a first delivery. And this is pretty important because there are lots of negative outcomes related not only to a first adolescent pregnancy, but also a subsequent pregnancy. The literature is very limited about the distinction between what predicts and what are the consequences of a first versus a subsequent pregnancy. But in general, outcomes related to a first pregnancy are compounded when a second occurs. Particularly important are outcomes related to educational attainment. It increases, basically having multiple children increases adolescents' barriers to employment opportunities, educational opportunities. Also, there are negative consequences for children born to adolescents, low birth weight, preterm birth, specifically a second birth. And so like I said, there's limited literature differentiating first and higher order pregnancies. That's sort of my course of research, and hopefully what I'll talk about today will help to distinguish that a little bit. So I used two sources of data for this project. The first is quantitative data collected through the Mobile Youth Survey. This is a multiple cohort longitudinal study that's been conducted in the 14 most impoverished census tracts in Mobile, Alabama for the past 11 years. I don't have exact numbers, but I think that the number of unique cases is about 7,000, and there's several thousand kids who've been followed for 5 years or more. It's a multiple-choice survey with about 300 variables related to health, substance use, interpersonal relationships, sexual behavior, just many, many variables. I also conducted in-depth interviews with a subsample of 19 of the female adolescents who participated in the Mobile Youth Survey, as well as with their mothers. But I won't be talking about the data from their moms today. That would require a day, not 20 minutes. But basically, during these interviews, they were conducted with adolescents who reported either being pregnant twice, having two children, or being pregnant and wanting to get pregnant again, which is a variable in the MYS. And the interviews basically focused on their expectations of pregnancy, what it was like to be a mother, did they know how to prevent a pregnancy, you know, what happened between having the first baby and getting pregnant with the second, and then also the goals and aspirations that the adolescents had for themselves and their children. So today what I'm going to do is talk about five adolescents. Among the 19 who I interviewed, I selected five who had been pregnant at least twice and also participated in the MYS for four consecutive years between the ages of 14 and 18. Just to sort of, I don't want to say corroborate what they said in the qualitative interviews, but to sort of give a little more information about, you know, what was going on as they were really in their adolescence and while they were having their pregnancies. And I looked at each case individually and identified themes across the cases. So, did I just... No, okay. So, these are the five girls. These are not their real names. And I just want to speak about each of them very briefly because I really struggled with how to present this information because these are, you know, real people who shared their stories and their time and really personal, important information. And I hate to just, you know, and they said this because they're real people. So very quickly, Carrie, when I spoke with her, was pregnant with her second child, living with her mom and her younger sister and her baby. It was a packed household. She had some pretty severe learning disabilities and I think had finished the eighth grade. Cynthia was pregnant with her second child as well, living with her mother and three of her sisters. Several of them had children. So again, it's big, big household, lots of kids. And she actually was, she had joined the armed services, but she was pregnant, so she wasn't active at the time. Shayna actually had two children when I spoke with her, and no immediate plans within the next 5 years to have another child, and she had taken steps to ensure that. She lived with her aunt. She had been living with her aunt since she was a very young girl, and she, although she wasn't so involved with her children's father, he was involved as a parent. Tina had two children, a little girl and a little boy. She lived with an aunt as well. Her daughter lived with her, and her son was living with relatives in another state. And then finally, Wanda, she was pregnant, very sort of early days pregnant when I met her. And her first child had been born, was a stillbirth, and when she was 15 years old. And so it's some pretty complicated feelings about this this repeat pregnancy. So after talking to these five girls and looking at their the quantitative data collected through the MIS, my numbers are totally wrong today, four themes came up that sort of resonated with the literature on the topic and just were sort of repeated over and over again. And these are the things I'll talk about today. Pregnancy intention, contraception, parenting support, and aspirations for the adolescent's children and herself. Additional themes that were really common across not only these five cases but the 19 were that childbearing was fairly normative within the community. Early childbearing was the sort of influence of social support by friends and the impact that parenthood had on the adolescent's educational attainment. So pregnancy intention. The literature basically says that intention for a first pregnancy and a second pregnancy predicts a rapid repeat pregnancy. And a lot of the literature says that that often first pregnancies are not planned, but that second pregnancies are. So when I asked the adolescents about this, for the most part, they reported none of them were planned. The quantitative data, which it asked, the MIS asked the question, are you currently trying to get pregnant? How would you feel if you got pregnant? All five of them, all 4 years they participated, said they were not trying to get pregnant. They had mixed feelings about if they got pregnant, how would they feel? Some years happy, some years angry, some years wouldn't care, but they were not planning it. They also reported that when finding out they were pregnant for the first time, they didn't know they were pregnant. They didn't know to seek a pregnancy test. It was basically their mothers were noticing symptoms in them and suggested that they go get a pregnancy test. So Shayna's quote is pretty, you know, it pretty much sums up, you know, what an adolescent feels like. She's in high school, and as she said, I never saw myself having a baby. That never, you know, occurred to me until I got in high school and we all, you know, took the parenting class and things, and it just, I mean, I still wasn't planning on having one, but it just came about. And then Tina, who has two children, and this this quote of hers, she said this kind of thing repeatedly. Now, the second time I got pregnant, I felt like killing myself because I didn't want no baby. I didn't want no other baby because it was already hard for me to have the other one. And so this is part of the quandary about rapid repeat pregnancy. You've been pregnant before. You don't want a second baby. You know, and you would think at that point that there's the knowledge and the skills to prevent a second birth, but not always. And that's where contraception comes in. And contraception is probably discussed the most in the literature about rapid repeat pregnancy. And there's a large body of literature that says that use of a long-acting contraceptive that's not user-dependent is really the way to prevent a rapid repeat pregnancy. So depot shots, IUDs, anything, you know, taking a birth control pill is hard for an adolescent. You don't wake up the same time every day. Adolescents really aren't always that great at keeping up with things. And so the literature is saying that user-dependent methods are often not effective within this population. And what the adolescents I spoke with said were that basically they knew how to prevent a pregnancy. And although they didn't consistently use contraception prior to a first pregnancy, they reported using condoms but not a hormonal birth control. They did use a hormonal birth control during the interpregnancy interval, but almost all of them talked about the side effects, switching methods, you know, not using it consistently, and basically that leads to an additional pregnancy. Like Carrie said, she talked extensively about the side effects of hormonal birth control and switching from one method to another. She said that depo had me real swollen, had me with a heart condition. So my mama just took me off that and put me back on the patch. And the patch got me real irritated and had blood clots and stuff. So she started making me take the pills. And so you can sort of see from that it just doesn't sound like it's going to prevent a pregnancy. And then Tina spelled out very clearly the problem with birth control pills. The pills don't prevent the baby anyway, because you got to take them at the same time every day, but I can't take them at the same time every day. And then Wanda talks about, getting pregnant, the pregnancy resolving, and then during that interpregnancy interval, consistently using contraception and then stopping and for a long time, and then getting pregnant. There was this sort of feeling that, well, I'm having unprotected sex for 8 months and not getting pregnant. I guess I can't get pregnant. And feeling sort of safe about that when in actuality they could. Parenting support was another issue that came up pretty frequently. The literature basically says that high levels of family support are protective for a first and a higher order adolescent pregnancy. And all of the girls I interviewed spoke about having a good relationship with their mother or their mother figure, and that their mother or mother figure was very helpful following the birth of the first child. That their mom sort of took the reins, and ultimately, you know, the girls got pregnant again. And basically what the adolescents had to say was that their moms were like, you know, the first one, that's my responsibility, I'm the mother, and the second one was, okay, now it's your turn. And so part of the thinking here, or on my part, is, you know, if you're not able to experience the full impact of, you know, the full consequences, you're not sort of bearing the brunt of motherhood, it's sort of easy to do it again. So like what Carrie said, her mom told her, you know, the first one's on me, the second one's on you. And Cynthia, you know, described her mother's role in caring for her first child. She said, you know, my mom's very involved. She's a grandmother. She's like the second mother. She'll feed him and clothe him and bathe him and do his hair, and I just sit over there and rest. And Shayna, the same thing. You know, her mother made it her business to have most of the responsibility. My first baby, she was always just doing everything. And then, like, with my second baby, she was more, you know, giving me guidance. like, go get him, you know what to do, or whatever. For my first baby, it was, I never did anything. And they did, you know, the adolescents did report that they had a second one, and kind of like a couple of slides back when Tina said, I had the second one, and I just wanted to kill myself. It was too much. Finally, aspirations in terms of education and employment. This is really talked about a lot in the literature, not only as sort of a cause of, that low aspirations may be sort of a cause or a predictor of first and higher order adolescent pregnancies, but also that aspirations are impacted by adolescent pregnancies. You know, it changes. You kind of realize, well, I have children now, and maybe I can't do what I wanted to do before. So that's sort of a different issue. Is it a cause? Is it a consequence? Is it both? But basically, the adolescents reported very high aspirations for their children, very high aspirations for themselves. And in the quantitative data, they reported over time very high aspirations, wanting to go to college, thinking they would go to college. And for, you know, for their children, their aspirations were, they wanted more for their kids than they had for themselves. They wanted their kids to stay in school, to graduate, to have a better life. Like Tina says, I don't want my children to be like I was. I don't want my children to be like that. I want my children to be different from me. But mostly it was, you know, the aspirations for their children were very similar to the aspirations for themselves. At the time of the interview, one adolescent had her GED and one finished high school, but the rest had stopped around eighth grade. And so that was really important to them. They were seeing that they weren't able to get jobs. Like Wanda said, she wants her children to graduate and not be a dropout like me. Since I dropped out of school, it's been hard for me to try to get my GED, and it's hard finding a job. And I don't want them to be like that. Their aspirations for themselves were, you know, to get on their own, to get a job, to be self-sufficient, to raise their children right, to basically achieve the goals that they had for themselves prior to having children that they still believed that they could achieve. And several of them were making real concrete steps in that direction. So, conclusions, and these, I don't know if these are necessarily conclusions, but there are several things that I found that conflict with the literature. The first is pregnancy intention. As far as I could tell from everything that the adolescents said, they did not intend either their first or their second pregnancy. And the literature tends to state that, specifically with the second pregnancy, that it is planned. Also, high aspirations. They're looking at the quantitative data, their aspirations did not change over time. They were always high. They always thought they would finish high school. They wanted to finish high school. And so, you know, it would take a much larger than 5-person sample to determine if there's, you know, a real cause and effect here related to, you know, aspirations and a first pregnancy, and then after that pregnancy, if the level of aspirations change. There's two little findings that, to me, hint at a difference between a first and a higher-order pregnancy. The first is prevention efforts. So the adolescents didn't really do a lot to prevent a first pregnancy. For the most part, they talked about using condoms, but not any sort of hormonal or long-acting birth control. Although they did, during the interpregnancy interval, use some sort of method, if inconsistently. In the state of Alabama, babies that are births that are funded by Medicaid, it's sort of an automatic contraceptive counseling session that happens after, to, you know, just to sort of get the mother thinking about birth control, and that may be related to this, at least, you know, fairly consistent contraceptive use immediately following the birth. And the other difference in first and higher order pregnancy was the support provided by the grandmother of the baby. You know, the first time she was willing to help, she sort of felt like it was her responsibility as a mother to take care of her daughter and her daughter's child. But with the second pregnancy or the second birth, the grandmother, you know, sort of hands off, This is your thing now. So ultimately, I think that those conclusions warrant further research. This is always an easy thing to say, not so much to do. And that's it. If y'all have any questions, I'm happy to answer them. The ethnic composition? So the Mobile Youth Survey in general is about 99% African American, and all living in Mobile, Alabama. The sample here is 100% African American. Yeah. There's, okay, let me think. So, for a couple, and she asked for those who couldn't hear if the males, if the fathers of the babies were involved. A couple of the girls, their children had different fathers, and for the most part, they reported that the fathers were not really involved, and if they were involved, it was sort of in a token way. Once a quarter, they'd give her $10. One girl, Shayna, who had two children who had the same father, and he lived in the same neighborhood, and his parents were very involved with the grandchildren. He took a lot of responsibility for the children. But for the most part, the girls who were pregnant, they both were no longer involved with the fathers of their children. And in fact, a number of the fathers had children with other partners, so it becomes this, they're spread very thin. And I didn't interview the fathers, so any information about that was from either the adolescent or the mother. And the adolescent's mothers had much more negative things to say than the adolescents did. Did the adolescents have relationships with their fathers? I would say, none of them lived with their fathers, and several of them had some interaction with their fathers, but for the most part, not really. Some of their fathers were no longer alive, and some fathers, they often didn't share a father with their siblings, so the family was had lots of branches. So it was, they kind of talked about their father in terms of, I think occasionally some of the mothers wanted the daughters to go live with the father because there were problems. But for the most part, it was a female-headed household almost exclusively. Well, in general, the literature talks about a good relationship with the mom, and having high levels of parenting support is protective for a repeat pregnancy. And what I found was that the more the mom helped, and granted, I only spoke with girls who had two pregnancies, but their mothers helped a lot at the first pregnancy, or following the first pregnancy, and then sort of handed over the responsibility to the adolescent for the second. And the adolescents did talk about, you know, having a baby didn't seem like such a big deal. I didn't really have to do anything. So in a way, if you have someone sort of taking on that responsibility for you, it's not a proven cause and effect, but it seems that maternal support could be kind of risky for having a second pregnancy. Good.
I think we're going to go on to the next presentation. Thank you very much. That was really interesting. We will have time to go back for questions at the end of the session. Click that. Our next presentation is by Mark Makuda. And hold on, let's make sure.